episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where you take movies we used to love as kids. We do a little re-examining in the light of 2021.
It's a spooky, spooky light.
The spooky, harsh, and sober light of 2021.
Halloween!
Right? We're at the end of our what are we calling it? Our Shocktober? Our Schlocktober?
Oh, no.
Our Horrortober?
Spooptober.
Spooptober.
Yeah.
That's good. Nobody else has that one.
Yeah.
And we're here with our last movie of Halloween.
No, already?
I know.
I love this. This is my favorite month.
We didn't do time management well or cram in another episode.
Yeah.
Oh.
We were too busy watching all the spooky movies, and then we were like, shit, we should talk about some of those spooky movies.
Yes. And we did that. So before, thank you very much for listening, folks. If you've listened to our Sleepy Hollow episode earlier this month that we did with the wonderful people at What a Movie Podcast, James and Nicole.
Lovely peeps.
The lovely, lovely humans. We also did Halloween Town, Disney Channel movie. That was your choice last week.
Yes. Yeah.
And now it's my choice.
It's your choice.
I have been wanting to do this movie on the podcast since we started this 3 years ago.
You have. You've been talking about it for a long time.
I've been talking it up. Folks, it's finally time. It's time to talk about Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell.
It's time to get dragged.
It's time to drag and get dragged. Me, my girl, Christine Brown. This movie about middle management.
Ugh.
Where the
and how it slowly sucks your soul out trying to survive under capitalism.
The stakes are life, death, and promotion.
And getting dragged to hell in internal torment.
Oh my god. Lauren, mm-hmm. I guess I'll start with this because it's an easy one for you. What's the first time you saw this movie?
Tonight!
Hells yeah! What did you know about this movie going in, if anything?
Nothing. I knew the basic outline. And I knew that there is like vague, like semi-joking discourse about whether or not she deserves the curse of getting dragged to hell in this film.
So you knew going in
that, that she works at a bank, she denies someone an extension on a loan. I think I knew that because her boss told her to, and then she gets cursed. And I remember being like, that doesn't sound fair.
But did you know the ending?
No, I did not know the ending.
Okay, because that's crucial.
I did not know the ending.
I feel like this movie
I feel like I guessed the ending around the 3/4 mark.
Yeah.
But yeah. I actually didn't guess the entire ending because I thought, spoiler alert for this movie.
We're going to spoil the show of this.
I thought that Justin Long was going to get dragged to hell.
Oh.
Because I thought the switcheroo was going to happen and that he, because she had given him the coin, that he had taken ownership of, like, whatever's in this envelope, and that would be enough to, like, doom him. So that is, like, also would thematically fit this recurring idea that she keeps dooming other people in trying to get herself out of the curse. I thought that, but actually she gets dragged to hell.
You didn't count on the fact that Justin Long was a 100% nice guy in this and was just gifting people things left and right.
So
I remember seeing this movie in theaters in 2009.
Tracks for you.
And loving it.
Yeah.
Like, really not knowing what to expect with it. I had, like, kind of just started watching the Sam Raimi movies from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The Evil Dead movies specifically. But I loved those. And I remember seeing the trailers for this, and it looked too scary for me.
Too scary?
I was like, this looks like it's going to be a little too gross, a little too
for
jump scary.
You? Too scary for you?
Well, when I watched those Evil Dead movies, and this is how I feel about a lot of, like, last night, for instance, it was, like, 11:45 at night, and I turned on, like, one of the, like, OG Friday the 13th movies.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain horror movies that I'm like, I can totally watch this before bed or watch this to get sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are others that I can't. Mm-hmm. Especially, and a lot of it, to me, does have to do with if it was made a while ago.
Mm.
Because there's a remove of, like, this is a movie.
Mm.
Sometimes if the effects are super good or anything like that, I'm like, oh, this feels a little too... Or, like, a lot of modern horror movies are, like, they're louder, they're faster paced, they rely on jump scares much more often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I can't...
Certain movies are not fall asleep movies.
No, like,
I turned on The Shining the other night, and I was, like, kind of dozing off, but it was a very disconcerting experience, because we got, like, halfway through, I started dozing off, but I would wake up when the soundtrack was, like, blaring with those, like, really intense screechings like,
yeah, man.
Strings. So I would like be in the middle of like a half dream, and then it would get really disturbing because I'd be half awake, and I would wake up, and suddenly there was just this horrible shit that I was seeing.
Lauren
it was
just
very weird,
screaming the phrase "white man's burden," and then woke up, and it was like, Jesus.
That tracks for me. Yeah.
And she was like, "How long have I been asleep?" And I said, "You've always been asleep."
That's just a Tuesday, you know. I'm screaming white man's burden every night. It's
you, me, my and thing. Del Grady just screaming it. But yeah, so this one I thought was maybe a little going to be too spooky for me when I first went to go see
too
it.
Spooky.
Turns out I was wrong, and I absolutely loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this tracks for you. This is very much a you movie.
I was like, I was so tickled with how campy this movie was. Mm-hmm. While writing a nice line of being like, it like more of an onslaught than anything else. Like, this movie's a fucking like Universal Studios ride.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Like, it's not a, it's like barely a movie.
It's incredibly silly.
It's so silly. But it's also got just like a good vibe, and thank God we have Sam Raimi in the director's chair, somebody who knows how to fucking direct these movies.
Yeah, it's told with such a palpable sense of glee. Like, there is just something that you can tell that Sam Raimi's like, we are going to cast the cutest little baby girl to play this lead, and then we're gonna straight up wreck this girl.
We're gonna put her through the ringer
for an hour and a half. We're gonna fucking wreck this baby girl. I loved it.
Yeah, man, it's not a great look for Alison Lohman in this movie, just with everything put through.
God, she's getting like stuff vomited into her mouth. I did not live. Those are the parts of the movie that I did not enjoy.
But no, you're absolutely right. This movie is made with the glee of a man that has been making fucking franchise entertainment for the better part of a decade and finally gets to do what he wants.
Yeah.
It's why I think, spoiler alert for recommendations at the end, I feel like the recommendation that you and I both kind of came to was like, honestly, another similar thing of somebody who's been stuck behind a franchise entertainment for a while and just needed to stretch their freaky little wings.
Recommendations, I think, are going to be a little different this week because I think that it is such a clear line that it's actually a really interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah.
In that, because I don't think a movie like this, like Drag Me to Hell, has gotten made recently. And that's why it was such a breath of fresh air. Because you get like the horror comedies that are much more like comedy, but with horror elements. You get stuff like Freaky. You get stuff like Happy Death Day, which don't get me wrong, I absolutely fucking love. But you don't get this like campy, just like, this is horror and it's fucked up to watch, but I'm laughing at just like the pure audacity of it.
Yeah.
Ian, I'll just say it. Ian and I are both going to recommend a movie called Malignant.
We're not going to spoil Malignant.
We're not going to spoil Malignant. Promise. Like, this isn't going to be, like, a discussion episode on Malignant. But, like, I'm sure if you've heard anything about Malignant, you've heard that it's just, like, it is absolutely buck wild.
And that is true.
And it, so there's a direct line to this. Like, the only movie that I can think of that is, like, more buck wild than, like, Drag Me to Hell is, like, Malignant.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a few levels above this movie on the buck wild scale.
Yeah, but I also don't feel like you get Malignant without this.
I'm just saying that like there is a torch passing.
Yeah.
That is really fun to watch of like this paved the road for that, but also like this movie like Malignant couldn't fly if this one didn't walk for it, you know? Or like go into a nice steady
or get
jog.
Dragged.
Yeah. get dragged down to hell where Malignant lives.
But yeah, it's
and I there's just a similar sense of like glee for the audience as well of just like this is so fucked up, but it goes so ridiculous that you just have to enjoy it.
Yeah, because that's my thing with like some of the more contemporary horror comedies, a lot of which you and I enjoy. You just cited like the Christopher Landon movies, Happy Death Day and Freaky,
which like I've got a season pass on those movies. Like any of them. I'm gonna watch them.
Same with like Ready or Not. Like I like
love it.
The, like
one of my favorite movies of that year.
Yeah. But the thing that I think separates this from those is those movies feel more like comedies with horror, like in a horror setting.
Yes.
And this feels like a horror movie that just goes so far that it becomes comedic.
Yeah. There are different types of approaches to the horror comedy.
Yeah.
And one is significantly more popular, right? And they're both really great, but one is significantly more popular and the other, and like this type is much rarer because I do think it's much, much more difficult to pull off.
Yes, I do too.
I think this is a much trickier balance to pull.
This is a difficult tone. And I think it's a tone that like, you know, you achieve a lot in early like 1950s and 60s horror movies accidentally and ironically.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a deft hand like Sam Raimi. I think it's like, we can't undersell how talented Sam Raimi is or how like like how singular this movie is, just because like I don't know any other director that can do this tone. Yeah. The only other people I can think of are maybe Robert Rodriguez.
I would say the other one that comes to mind, and it's interesting that you're talking about this, I think the other thing that it reminds me of is like, in a different way, because this, I think Edgar Wright does something very similar. And I think the thing that I'm realizing sets movies like this apart from the like Happy Death Days and all of those is that in those movies, it feels that the comedy is isolated from the horror.
Yeah.
And there is something in these movies, and I think that is more difficult to pull off, that the comedy comes through in the horror. Yeah. They're not isolated from each other. The comedy exists within the realm of horror. It's why it reminds me of Edgar Wright, not necessarily because it's doing the same thing, but because in the same way that Edgar Wright is for comedy doing this really interesting thing where the jokes live in the editing. The jokes live in the cuts and in the timing of the actual filmmaking. Mm-hmm. It's not just these funny actors making funny faces and saying funny things. It is that. And that is there. But also you have these amazing jokes where like, it's funny when he decides to cut away from a shot. It's funny how he does scene transitions. And it's funny how that builds. And I see so much of that in this movie too, that like, the way that you build up the scare is the same way that you build up a laugh. He's really like embracing this wonderful thing that we've always known for a long time, which is that like, it's a very similar experience watching a comedy and watching a horror.
Yeah.
That it is a very similar catharsis, but he's literalizing that in a really interesting way by going, let's set those both up at the same time and do them both at the same time.
Yeah. It's part of why, I mean, I think unsurprisingly to a lot of people, like they're probably my two favorite genres.
Mm-hmm.
And because they both do that thing and they both require a certain amount of like tension building and then release.
Yeah.
And but they're there for a reaction. Mm-hmm. It's a reactionary art form. There's actually a really interesting interview that came out, I think yesterday or today, like Bill Hader in Variety or something like that, talking about...
I'm sorry, Bill Hader's talking in Variety. Boy. We have to stop this fucking podcast, and I need to read this article because I am dreadfully short on Bill Hader content.
Well, but talking about like how similar making horror and making comedy is, mm-hmm. because they're both this reactionary art form that's meant to elicit a response. We watched a great movie similar to this. Obviously, we can't like recommend it because it came out in the 70s. Last Halloween, called House, that I thought had a very similar vibe.
Very much the same thing.
It's on Criterion, and it was one of the strangest 70 minutes of filmmaking I've ever seen.
It's odd.
It was incredible.
It's absolutely...
I loved it.
Weird and fun.
Yeah.
Not for everyone, but is very silly. Also, a favorite movie of Bill Hader's.
Yeah.
I love you, Bill.
So, let's dive in. Drag Me to Hell, 2009, directed by Sam Raimi, coming off of Spider-Man 3 in 2007.
Good for him.
Co-written by Sam and Ivan Raimi, the Raimis. Fun story about this. Apparently, Spider-Man 3.
Coming hot off Spider-Man 3. Genuinely one of my favorite movies. I've watched that movie so many times.
I do think that's your favorite one of the trilogy.
It's the one I've watched the most, I gotta say. That tracks for me, right?
We'll do those. I want to do all three of them.
I want to as well because I love all three of them for very different reasons.
Same.
I would say I love them pretty equally, but for very different reasons.
Oh, no. There's a big decline.
there's a big decline in quality, but my engagement with all of them is the same.
Yes.
Because I'm still just like, I think interestingly, like Spider-Man 3, I think the main reason is just like, I love that for the same reason that you love this. And what makes Sam Raimi is like, because it is ridiculous. Even when it's not good, it is ridiculous and it's memorable.
He makes choices.
Like, when it's bad, it's fascinating to look at.
Yes, but here's my thing with this.
Yeah.
Is like, this movie to me, and I think, again,
I'm not saying it's on the same level of quality as Spider-Man 3, for the record.
Okay,
No, better movie.
but here's again why I'm just fascinated by this particular movie. Mm-hmm. And why I love Sam Raimi so much. The tone he strikes in the Evil Dead movie specifically carries into this. And it makes sense. Him and his brother wrote this movie after they had finished Army of Darkness. So they wrote this in like 93.
Hmm.
And then just like got just, you know, did other stuff. Eventually was directing Spider-Man's. And then was like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going back to my roots.
Yeah.
But it's the difference between a horror movie like Sleepaway Camp or something that's like, it's so outlandish and bad that mm-hmm. it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely think this movie is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it knows what it's doing and it does it very well. It's just in how far it pushes the horror, it turns into camp.
Yes.
So I think there's like, because I think a lot of times on this podcast, and you and I both are guilty of like recommending and championing movies that are like, this is awesome because it's bad. We mm-hmm. both love Cats because mm-hmm. it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But like, then there's another realm of movies that are like, these movies are good, they're made really well, and we love them. And then there's a movie that's very, very good, but does something so well that it's like, yeah, no, I spend a majority of my time in this horror movie laughing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because it's bad. It's because mm-hmm. it's so extreme.
Yeah, I think it's an incredibly well-made movie.
Yeah, and I think, and for a PG-13 movie as yeah. well, like, and that's it's like, pretty impressive. It is
tightly, like, edited and made, like...
It's like 90 minutes. It's yeah, great.
There's, like, the scares are not lazy like a lot of the, like, early mid-2000s scares are. Like, you see so much, like, absolute laziness in scares these days. So it's really nice to see someone do something different with scares.
Yeah.
And see someone...
like, care about the scares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They scare and, because they care.
And making unique scares. Like, it's... It's really interesting. Yeah, no, I brought up Spider-Man 3 not because I think that they're like, that movie's bad and this movie's bad. I just think it's interesting to look at the two sides of the coin of like, oh, this is what Sam Raimi... Oh, no. What Sam Raimi does incredibly well. And then kind of... it's just like a fascinating experiment while looking at Spider-Man 3 and seeing that kind of like gone off balance.
Mm-hmm.
And gone off the rails a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's, again, it's not one of those movies like... that's just like, oh, I can dismiss as like, this is a bad movie. Spider-Man 3 is fascinating because it is bad in such a unique way that I've never seen before. Because it's just like, yeah, no, it's not bad because it's lazy. It's bad, like, you went for it. Like, I cannot blame you. Like, you went for it. That sequence where he's dancing in the streets, you cannot say that every person involved wasn't going for it. It just happened to miss really big, but I love it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty rough in yeah. certain areas, but
it is like, it is still like good and bad. It's interesting looking at like multiple like movies in his back catalog that it's just like, they're all him. They all have his stamp on it.
Yeah.
So clearly good and bad. It is Sam Raimi.
Yeah. Like, what's interesting to note as well, I'm actually on his IMDb right now. Is that Sam Raimi directs one movie after this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called Oz the Great and Powerful.
Oh, no. Really?
Directs Oz the Great and Powerful in 2013.
A movie that doesn't feel like no. Sam Raimi at all.
No. And does he has not directed a movie since.
Until
the new Doctor Strange.
Yeah, which I'm very excited for.
Yeah, which I am too. But that'll be almost 10 years
wow.
without Sam Raimi having directed a movie. He's directed episodes of some TV shows.
Did he direct episodes of that Ash show?
Yeah, he's apparently directing okay. one episode of Ash versus the Evil Dead. 50 States of Fright, he did three of those. Stuff like that. Rake.
Mm.
But before then, I mean, he was making a movie every year or two.
Hmm.
And not all of them were spooky movies. He did a baseball movie called For Love of the Game. He did like kind of a psychological thriller called The Gift in 2000.
Oh, he did The Gift?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that Cate Blanchett movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. It's fine. Okay. But I think like this is where I'm like, no, this is pure Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is why you go see
his
movies.
This is Raimi distilled, yeah.
Yeah. So let's begin. Let's dive in.
Mm-hmm.
So we begin with Christine Brown.
Such a generic name.
Played by Alison Lohman, a pretty generic white lady. She, Alison Lohman, you may recognize her. She was in Matchstick Men. She was in White Oleander. She was in Big Fish. She plays young Jessica Lange in Big Fish. But yeah, she's in this movie, and she's a perfect avatar for what happens to her in this movie.
Yep, she's an innocent baby girl. Like,
you look at that face and you go, you have done nothing to no one and never.
When she's like, I'm a vegetarian and I work with puppies, you're like, yeah, no, that tracks.
That fucking tracks.
We all know this fucking girl, yeah.
She's working at a bank.
Working at a bank, her greatest like ambition in life is to be the assistant manager at this bank.
Yo, good for her. You know what? It's good to have goals. I don't want to shit on my girl Chris. You gotta have goals in this world. And there are some people that just want to be assistant managers at a bank. That's a big deal to some people.
Yeah.
Especially
when your boyfriend, like, who's definitely gonna propose to you soon, like, is super fucking rich.
Like,
and
loaded.
And you could just, like, kind of coast.
Oh, 100%.
She doesn't need it.
Like, do we want to talk about her past at all? Like, there are, like, vague references.
She lived on a farm.
She lived on a farm and it was apparently, like, a little bit heavier when she was a kid.
They show a picture of it and I'm like, yeah, like, you were, like, a younger kid. Like, you had baby fat. Like,
what's
I'm
hilarious,
sorry.
Though, is it's a picture of her with a little bit of baby fat in front of a pig with a blue ribbon that's, like, the pig contest winner. And it's just a picture of, like, it's like a scene of her, like, looking at that when she's feeling insecure and then just, like, defiantly, like, no, that's not
I'm
me.
I'm not a pig lady. And you're like, okay, you were never a pig.
Yo,
like,
man, why didn't Lamia turn her into a pig lady? That would have been her greatest fear.
Yeah.
So, she wants this manager job. I'm going to stop and go back even further because we forgot about the actual first scene of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
The seance. The exorcism seance, whatever
in the opening scene? No, it's not even that. They're just like, yeah, no, our kid did some fucked up shit. He's about to get dragged to hell.
Yeah, they're like, our kid is having...
They never get to the seance. That kid gets yoinked down to hell.
This family arrives at this woman named Sean's house, and they're like, yo, Sean, you're a medium. Like, can you exorcise this demon from our child? This guy's like trying to like, you know, attack our kid. And she's like, yeah, sure, let's gather around this table and do this real quick. Turns out this spirit is like, nah, dog, you can't defeat me. And the coolest thing about the spirits in this movie is they are viciously violent. and unbelievably strong. Yeah. Everyone is getting yeeted across rooms. Mm-hmm. Everyone's being thrown off of stairs.
They're very theatrical.
It's so great. Too. Yeah, the Lamia is a theatrical bitch.
There's a part later where the Lamia just like possesses someone and like does a little dance, and I love that.
It's the best
like,
scene in
like
the movie.
Like Pennywise style. Like
it is the best scene in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like Pennywise is just like, you wish you were as cool as Lamia. Like, you wish, yeah. Bitch.
Lamia danced so Pennywise could jig. Like,
exactly. So Pennywise could do a full like routine on a stage in a sewer.
The Lamia jibbed so that Pennywise could jab.
Yeah. So he could do a full
a jib jab.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yours is better. I was trying to work for something and you know what, yours is better. I can recognize that.
Oh well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
The Lamia yeets this child off the second floor.
I love watching children get yeeted. It's like, honestly, anytime I'm in a movie, like a little child gets yeeted. When it's in a movie, obviously.
I am
insanely happy.
I came home the other day, Lauren sitting there, big bowl of popcorn, smile on her face, watching Beasts of No Nation, just smiling at child soldiers because she loves watching kids get yeeted.
No.
It's disgusting
there
what children...
There is no yeeting in that movie.
Yeah, that's... No, there's no yeeting.
No,
in that
there's
movie.
No yeeting.
There's a lot of other really fucked up stuff in that
movie. I did love it in
though.
Twilight when Dakota Fanning just yeeted that little baby into the fire.
Yeah, imagine that but Dakota Fanning's got the arm of the vampire that was pitching in the first movie during the baseball scene. I forget which one it was. Renesmee, was that one?
No, that's Jasper.
I say.
I work for the Confederacy and I'm a good guy. Shut up, Jasper. Get the fuck out of here.
So,
never forget.
The Southern vampires apparently will rise again. Never mind, that's the tagline for Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Movie that said it wasn't racism, it was vampires.
Yeah, oh my god, side note, if Jasper had showed up in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter in just like one scene, he walks into the frame and then like backs out, just like, I'm not gonna deal with this.
This is not the Confederacy I fought for.
I do love that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunters is like, no, the U.S. is fine. We don't have a racism problem. We have a vampire problem.
I think we can all agree. Regardless.
This was not about slavery. This was about vampires. I love Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter so much. That movie is trash.
The movie is so boring.
Oh my god, but it's not as fun, but the idea of it is so funny. Honestly, yeah. When you pointed out, like, I really wish that when he became, I honestly think really when Benjamin Walker becomes old Abraham Lincoln, it is insanely funny in every shot because you're just like, he looks so stupid. But as Ian was saying, at that point, he should have become Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis, uncredited, should have been in the third act of this film killing vampires.
Fuck that. No, they just should have showed footage from Lincoln. They just should have spliced in footage from Lincoln.
He's doing a speech and, like, gesturing, and every time he gestures, they just are like, oh, that killed a vampire.
He's just like, I need to kill vampires now, now, now!
Okay, we're so off topic.
This child gets dragged to hell.
Straight up dragged to hell.
And it's a great precursor for what we're about to watch.
You're like, you're like, oh, that is the title, Drag Me to Hell. That's what that kid said.
So, Alison Lohman wants this promotion. She goes to visit her boyfriend, Justin Long, who is a professor at a college, teaches psychology. He's the young, hot professor at this school. Oof. What school do you think he teaches at?
I don't know. Where are we? Pasadena?
Yeah. California Institute of Technology. California Polytechnic.
California Polytechnic.
Right down the street.
Yeah. That's a Vanishing Act joke for everyone who listens to our other show. Check it out.
On her way out, though.
Right down the podcatcher.
Her boss is like, hey, you're up for this promotion. It's you and this guy, Stu. But, you know, if you're going out for lunch right now, why don't you pick me up a fucking turkey club? And, hey, why don't you smile on your way out?
Yeah, it's bad.
It's gross.
He's basically like, you're not going to get this promotion, but, like, maybe you will if you pick me up lunch. Like, they're not Venmoing her back for it. That sucks.
He luckily never gets, like, creepy.
She does, like, put on lipstick and wear, like, a sexier outfit to go ask him for that advance. But
it doesn't work.
It doesn't.
He doesn't even acknowledge it.
You know what, Ian? You make a great point. There's a lot wrong with this manager, but that's not one of those things.
That's Christine reading into what she thinks the manager wants.
She's desperate, yeah.
Manager is a happily married man.
But he just happens to be a big fucking asshole.
Yeah. So, what ends up happening is she goes in to talk about this job. She comes out. And the boss says, I'm not looking for someone that's gonna be nice all day. Mm-hmm. I run a bank. I want someone that's gonna make the tough decisions.
And they do show multiple shots of her with other people, like, giving them loans when they need it and being super lenient and really being there and, like,
in being a nice person.
Well, and also, like, being in her job to help people in their life. So, like, she is set up as a good person.
Yeah, no, I worked at a bank. I thought I was a good person for a time, too. And then I quit.
She's about to be tested.
Yeah, so this woman comes up. Sylvia Ganish.
Oh, God.
The grossest little old lady in any movie ever.
Yeah, she's rough. She's, like, straight up, like, coughing, like, hacking up phlegm and all sorts of fluids. She's taking her fucking teeth out at the table.
She's sucking on hard candies and putting them back in the bowl.
She's a fucking monster.
And
this
she's
not
like,
making me, like, you're like, you can show basic etiquette to the service workers that are trying to give you a fucking break, lady.
Exactly. Especially, like, when we try to.
If you're asking for a favor, could you not fucking cough on my desk?
It's disgusting.
When you're asking for a favor?
But she's like, yo, I got all these letters. The bank's going to repossess my home. Can I get an extension? Mm-hmm. And Alison Lohman's like, I don't know, dog. Like, you've gotten two extensions already. Let me talk to my manager.
And she does. She tries to go and advocate for her and, like, get her an extension.
And the manager is like, I don't know. It's your call.
Yeah, and later in the movie tries to be like, she deserved this because it was her decision. She had to make the call. But also, like, her boss is basically looking at her and telling her, like, it's your call, but there is clearly a right and wrong call.
Oh, yeah, no. The subtext is, it's your call, and if you don't choose to foreclose on this woman's house, then you will not become the assistant manager.
Yeah.
But that is still a selfish act.
It is still a selfish act on her part to help. But, like, I also don't know enough about banks about, like, how many extensions is, like, it reasonable to get? Like, what is the expectation?
Depends on the mortgage.
But I also think, like, okay, so just getting into this, I just don't think it's
fair. So mortgages are...
I don't think it's fair that she gets cursed for this. I just want to say, like, obviously there is, like, she could have been better. She could have done more to help this woman.
Sure.
Obviously. But at a certain point, the problem here is capitalism. The problem is capitalism. The problem is systemic, and it goes up to her boss for her putting her in this position and the structures for not being there to support people when they are having trouble with housing. That's the problem. Alison Lohman can't fucking tear down capitalism in a single fucking day.
Well,
lady.
No, she tries to express this to a goat later on in the movie.
Yeah, she's like, she's trying. She's trying as much as she can within the structures of like the institutions that she has to work within. She's doing everything she fucking can and is really helping a lot of people. It really does seem like this lady set her up to fail.
Yeah.
It seems like this lady was like, yo, I've got a quota. I have to drag three people to hell by the end of this week.
Oh, and man. She's the cop that gave me a ticket last week.
And so it really does seem like she's goading, like, she's like, I'm sorry, I gotta hit this quota. Can you just give me, like, $1,000 out of your pocket? And it's like, no, I don't have that. Okay, cool, you're cursed. Like, it doesn't seem fair.
No, it doesn't.
I don't want to seem like someone who's like, boo-hoo, yay, capitalism. I'm not. I do think that this is a bullshit situation on all parts. I just think that Allison is not the person you should be taking this issue up with.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what
Especially
Lonnie
when is. Allison is, like, going out of her way to be like, are there people you can stay with? Do you have a support structure? And, like, this lady's just like, no, fuck you. No, yeah. Fuck you. I want my house. And it's just like, okay. But you have had multiple extensions. Like, she's trying to work with you and find something in between. And you're just straight up like, no.
Yeah, you're like, fuck assisted living homes. I'm not even going to call my granddaughter and let her know what's happening.
It's like, it's a messy situation.
It's like, no offense, Sylvia Ganish, but you don't really seem like you're in fighting shape to be hosting Sunday dinner.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, just
go
live
with your
grandma. You should
be living with your granddaughter. Like, I'm sorry, you should.
Yeah, like, that's not... Anyway, long story short, Allison Lohman's like, nah, dog, I'm not doing this. And then this lady's...
And it's pretty polite about it, too.
Unbelievably polite. Like, and then this old lady's like, all right, fine, you forced my hand. I'm going to get on my knees and beg really loudly and in Romani for you to
And I'm
going to
grab you and, like, really put you in, an uncomfortable position that is not acknowledging that like, Allison is also a human being.
Her name is Christine.
Sorry, Allison.
Allison Lohman is the
actress.
Oh,
that's the name of the actress. I'm an idiot.
She does look like an Allison.
She does look like an Allison because she is an Allison. but Christine is trying her best, and you put her in a really awkward position. And yeah, if someone does, like, run up to me and grab me, and is, like, begging, I'm also going to call security. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
ma'am. This is above my pay grade. I'm not an assistant manager yet. Take this up with the manager. This lady should have been like, I will speak to your manager. And then taking it up with him.
Yeah.
She's not even an assistant manager. She's a fucking grunt.
That's why, you know what the fucking move is?
Yeah.
When you know something's wrong, mm-hmm. and you're like, I'm dealing with somebody one-on-one, and I know that the answer I have to give them is the morally, like, wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your boss over.
Yeah, that's what I would have done.
Bring
your
fucking boss over. You let them explain it.
I legit would have been like, you should ask to see my manager. And then I would have been like, cool, manager,
come in here. Yeah, be like, look, I would love to give this to you, but I cannot.
Yeah.
But if you appeal to my manager, I think maybe he'll be able to give it to you.
And that's so
and
relatable.
If not, it
like
puts
we,
it on him.
Ian and I have both worked in customer service many times. Like,
yeah, I'm currently doing
that,
it.
Like, I also do recognize, like, like with Christine, where it's just like, yeah, I've also been in multiple situations where I'm like, look, I cannot give you a refund for this. I'm really sorry. But then I've been like, do you want to speak to my manager?
Hint,
ask to speak to my manager, then you'll get your fucking money.
Yeah.
Also, because
they don't want to deal with it either.
Well, and also, my manager's getting paid more than me, so if you're going to yell at someone, can you please yell at the person that's getting paid more?
We need to all stop yelling at customer service people.
We don't have any power.
No.
We don't have any power. Stop yelling at us.
We are literally there to shoo away problems that managers don't need to see. So
and
if
managers
the manager
are getting paid
to
more
it,
to get cursed. I'm sorry. You're
it's part of the job description.
I'm sorry.
You may get cursed by an older money woman. It's just part of it. You know what? At least you fucking get insurance.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, yeah, Christine's probably not getting fucking anything. She's probably getting minimum fucking wage. So you know what? You should shuffle this curse right on up to the top.
Yeah, screw that. I get minimum wage, no insurance, and I gotta buy your fucking turkey club. You can go get screwed, guy.
Yeah, no. So at the end of the day, she should have just shoved this off on upper management. This is bullshit.
Yeah, no. Anyway, this Romani woman curses her pretty hardcore. Mm-hmm. And but then security takes her out. She's walking home. And the manager is like, hey, this is like, that choice that you just made was grade A assistant manager material.
You really crushed that old lady beneath your boot.
You really made her feel the slow impending march of time towards the ever-present nothing of her life.
You really did metaphorically drag that old woman to hell.
Hope it literally don't happen to you later. Anyway, I'm going to go golf. Peace.
Yeah. I'm going to go I'm going to go enjoy my golf. I'm going to go hang out with Donald Trump. There we go.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a Republican.
In my mind, every bank manager is just like a friend of his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
You don't get into managing a bank for noble pursuits.
No.
You just don't.
Yep.
I'm
gonna go continue to not pay taxes.
So she walks to her car in the parking garage, mm-hmm. And she sees the old woman's car mm-hmm. parked across from her.
How does she know that's her car? She's like that car looks like shit,
and she can. She also was like, oh wait, that's the car from Evil Dead, and they're like, yeah, because it is the car from Evil Dead.
Yeah.
She hears the old woman coughing, and she's like, oh god damn it!
Now, god damn it, she's got COVID.
God damn it, this fucking old lady. Cut
is
to
this
one
just
of
a metaphor for COVID. One of my, like, I'm not wearing a mask, so fuck you.
Oh, dude, Sylvia Gannis, she would be totally against masks.
Oh yeah, she'd be like, whatever, give me my money, or you get COVID.
And I'll the Lami is such a trickster, you know, he wouldn't wear a mask neither.
No. Lami is a lady.
Well, you get an incredible scare here. This is one of my favorites in the movie.
Yeah, where she like turns around and she's in the backseat.
Yeah, you see this like
it's just
the handkerchief, which is all CGI and whatever. So it's but you see the handkerchief fly out of the Evil Dead car, fly across the parking lot and into her car, and the camera is slow and lyrical and melodic, mm-hmm. and you're just watching Alison Lohman kind of track where this handkerchief's going, and she's kind of turning around in her car, watching it outside of the car, and then she turns around in the back, and. Oopsie daisies, this old lady's in the back of your car! And what's this old lady's move? She's just like, fucking, gonna get you in a headlock, gonna crush your head.
This lady's about to straight up murder her.
This lady's about to fucking do a stone cold slam down on her.
At this point, Sylvia Gannis, you lost the moral high ground.
You were attacking someone in her car.
I'm sorry, at this point, you forfeit the moral high ground, lady, you know?
No, like, you forfeit the moral high ground when you physically attack someone.
Exactly, like, then you take it too far.
Yeah, sorry, but, like, in this instance, Alison Lohman's right.
You probably should just complain to her manager, like, I'm sorry. At a certain point, you should write up a formal complaint, you should complain to her manager and appeal to upper management.
I understand, the bureaucracy sucks, I wish there was something I could do, but also, I don't want to get cursed and dragged to hell.
But also, like, I'm not sure that I deserve to be dragged to hell.
We gotta play within this system, Sylvia, you and I are both not gonna change the game on this extension.
Sylvia, start a GoFundMe, I swear to God I'll donate, I'll share it to everyone I know. But
seriously,
like,
give me your granddaughter's number, I'll call her, I bet it's gonna be a lot easier.
It's revealed later in this movie that that I, Christine Brown, don't even have $10,000 in savings. Like,
oh my god, that's
so
very
like,
true.
Yeah, like she doesn't have anything. I'm also a victim of capitalism, and I also will probably lose my house because I have to pay for this fucking seance that you made me do.
All right, what are some of your favorite points from this fight?
This fight, I love the staple to the face.
She staples Sylvia Gannis in the face. I also love she shoves a ruler down her throat at one point.
And then I love that Sylvia Gannis, when she gets kicked out, just straight up takes a cinder block and throws it through the fucking window.
It's awesome.
It's really fun.
Yeah. And
it's like a full-on SmackDown fight.
It's like a four-minute fight between this young woman and this severely old woman.
It's like a tiny little bird woman and this old lady.
And this fucking Strega.
This old phlegm machine that is this lady. This lady that definitely has COVID.
This Baron Harkonnen in a lady form, just like... anyway, so she gets straight up yeeted out of this car. Alison Lohman drives away, but she's like, I'm pretty sure I'm cursed. They go get her palm read.
She takes the button.
Oh, yes, thank you.
She
old
curses
woman,
the button.
Yeah, all she wanted was a button. Takes a button from Alison Lohman's coat and curses it and then gives it back to her and is like, this is for you. Then she walks away.
Yeah.
Alison Lohman and Justin Long are then like out to dinner. They see a psychic shop. They decide to go in. Mm-hmm. And she gets her palm or her hand read.
It's quite fortunate for her that she ends up with this dude, because this dude's got the exact connections she needs.
Yeah, I mean it's movie magic. Long.
It's a small community.
It's Pasadena, California. There's seven people there.
The psychic community of Pasadena is pretty tight.
But this guy is straight up like, you are cursed, my
friend.
You're
straight up fucked, gal.
He was like, have you, what did he say? He's like, have you danced naked in any graveyards recently? Like,
yeah, have you used a Ouija board?
Have you ordered a number 7 at a Starbucks recently?
Have you seen the Annabelle doll anywhere around?
Oh my god. And she's like,
did you eat a Taco Bell today?
And she's like, oh my god, I've done all of those things and I hit an old woman. Nice. And he's like, oh, you're probably cursed.
He's like, you stapled an old lady in the face, that's a curse.
And he's pretty much tells her, he's like, yeah, it sounds like you got the Lamia. Here's what you got to look forward to, movie audience. 3 days of low-key hauntings.
3 days of like some little tricksy bullshit.
Of like some slowly escalating haunts, and then you're gonna get dragged to hell.
Yeah.
And she's like, cool, can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. Cool. So I, the first day, mm-hmm. and Justin Long's, he's skeptical because he's a psychology professor. Mm-hmm. And so he's all about logic. Mm-hmm. And this other guy's like, you gotta.
He's a non-believer.
Faith. Yeah. So the first kind of low-key haunts we get some pots and pans moving. Mm-hmm. Things get blown around. She's got this adorable playful little kitten. And he says, you've got to, she was like, how do I get rid of this? And he was like, I don't know, maybe like a low-key sacrifice would work, yeah. Like a chicken or like a small animal or something like that. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm a vegetarian.
She's like, I'll never do that. And he's like, you'd be surprised what you'll do.
He's like, yo, you don't want to get dragged to hell, do you?
He's like, yeah, I think you're going to change your mind. So he's like, yeah, you can like sacrifice a chicken, you could do like a gerbil or something like that, you know? Yeah.
So then she's back at her house, another haunting's happening to her. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite like images in the movie.
Which one?
Where she's like running through her house because she like can hear and feel something in her house. And she runs up the stairs and goes into the bedroom. Mm-hmm. While she's in the stairs, or while she's like in her bedroom, she like, it's just like a shot of the stairs. And you can see a shadow walking up the stairs and you can hear it walking up, but nothing ever comes into view physically.
Yeah.
So you can see.
There's a lot of really fun shadow work.
Yeah. And then she like locks the door. You can see these two big hoof shadows coming in from the door. And then these just shadowy hands come from under the door. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you're right. It's like a being that's a spirit. So it doesn't need to obey door law. Mm-hmm. So it comes in and then just starts yeeting her around the room.
Yep.
It's favorite move.
It's so good.
And then she's like, all right, I guess I gotta kill my cat.
And that's where she lost me.
This is where she loses
me. That's where she loses me. This is where I'm like, you've gone too far. I'm not rooting for you anymore. You gotta get dragged to hell. That poor little kitten didn't deserve this. And also, he said you could do a chicken, girl. Go get a chicken.
Yeah, but maybe it was like expediency sake. I don't have time. Where am I gonna get a live chicken? I'm in Pasadena.
She knows that she has 3 days. This is like day one. Go get a fucking chicken.
This is day two.
And you got another day.
Because what happens next is she's got dinner.
That kitten didn't deserve this. That's what I'm saying.
Not at all.
Also, so, well, because Justin Long's parents hate her.
Oh, yeah. So Justin Long's mother.
Some of the most brutal shit I've ever heard.
Is Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Like, she's is a monster.
100% they're Republicans.
100%.
She overhears him on a call with them, and his mom is basically like, oh, this is the girl from the farm. I just want a girl that I can play tennis with. She's just kind of like a nobody. She ain't shit. Go fuck yourself.
Also, he's like, we've been dating
Honestly, she could get dragged to hell and I wouldn't even care.
Does she like Tiffany's? No? Well, drag her to hell. She's also like Justin Long says, like, oh, well, we've been dating for almost a year. And she's never met them before.
Never.
What's
and
that
And he's
about?
Like, it's revealed later. He's about to propose to her.
He's and she's met his parents a grand total of once.
One time, and it doesn't go well.
No.
It goes, I would say, bad.
Oh, well, let's get to dinner.
Well, it goes well for the first couple minutes, actually, because she thinks that she's not cursed anymore. She is...
She's like, I've killed my cat.
Yeah.
I've not shown 1 ounce of remorse.
Great. I don't miss my cat at all. So it goes really weirdly. She turns it around. The parents actually end up really liking her because she's very forthright about, like, she's very honest and she's very down to earth, and they end up really liking her. And you can feel the Lamia in the background, just like, ooh, lovely family dinner you're having here. It'd be a shame if someone ruined it.
Looks like I may have to spook around dinner.
Looks like I smell another set piece.
Oh, your disgusting cake is perfect for me to put some eyeballs and dead flies.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, straight up exactly what happens.
Yeah, an eyeball shows up in that cake, baby.
It's great. It looks kind of like the book from Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is around the same time that she finds out that Sylvia Ganish. Okay. She finds out that she died.
Well, I was going to go to this afterwards.
Okay,
yeah.
I can't remember chronologically when it happened.
Well, let's finish the scene with the parents, then we'll do
great,
this.
Great.
Allison Lohman has a huge freak out and starts yelling at the wall. Mm-hmm. And the mom is essentially like, okay, she's straight up a dud. You got to get rid of her, Justin Long.
Yeah.
And Justin Long is... seems very, like, cool and individual on his own, but he's kind of a pushover with his parents.
Yeah, classic dud. He's the real dud.
He is a bit of a dud. He's a supportive, dud. But he's a beta. He's a huge beta.
Yeah, he does come through financially.
Whatever, he didn't do that. Mm-hmm. His parents did that. This may come before or after, but they that scene, but they go to Sylvia Ganish's house, and she sees the granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Who, like, looks like a Russian hacker. Like, yeah. She looks kind of, like, straight out of the Matrix.
She seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
And she's like, what, did my grandma curse you? She's been doing that a lot lately. Sorry.
She's like, yeah, she's, like, super old and senile. She curses anyone.
She's, like, straight up, like, she cursed the lady at the 7-Eleven the other day because she didn't have change. Like,
she walked to Burger King and asked for food but didn't have money to pay. And they were like, you need to pay. And she cursed everyone
she's
there.
She's like, how fucking dare you make me pay for things?
They're like, oh, my God, which Burger King? It's like, it's not there anymore.
Yeah, she went to the movie theater and they were sold out for the showing of Fantastic Four. And she just cursed everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone in the movie.
And now Fantastic Four 2 Rise of the Silver Surfer's coming out.
Chris Evans is going to get dragged to hell in like 3 days.
Yeah, well, at least we have a perfectly good Michael B. Jordan to take up the Johnny Storm mantle. remember that? Anyway, when she gets there, she sees that this is a funeral for Sylvia. And
Sylvia straight up died.
She, you know, she gets the spins because she's like, oh, fuck, I was planning on just asking this lady if she would just, like, take this goddamn, like,
curse
away
off of me.
But she spins around and falls into the casket face to face with the dead body mm-hmm. of Sylvia Ganish.
And then flips it over.
Yeah. Let's talk about this construction of this, because this is the movie in a nutshell,
There's a lot of vomit shots in this movie.
Yes.
That I, as someone who, like, has a literal, potentially could be diagnosed, like, phobia of people vomiting, did not enjoy.
Sure.
I can enjoy the, like, it's a funny idea. I just do not enjoy watching it. It genuinely does, like, trigger me.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's, like, the only thing in this movie that keeps me from fully enjoying it is, like, yep, triggering that phobia.
No, it's all over the place. It's a lot of bombs. A lot of bomb shams in this
one.
Yeah,
but I do love the weird corpse humor. I think that's really fun. There's multiple moments where Sylvia Ganish's corpse just straight up, like...
becomes, like, sentient.
Becomes, like, a character in the movie again. Like, without, like, actually coming to life. It's just sort of, like... the corpse just sort of ends up in funny places to, like, fuck her over.
It's awesome.
Like, and later it's, like, it's in a bunch of mud and it's with her and she just, like, throws her arm around her and you're like, hey, buddy, how you doing?
Get away from my grave, bitch.
It's very grotesque. I think that's what they're going for. They're going for over the top. They're going for the grotesque.
But what happens is Allison Lohman falls into this casket.
Christine Brown.
The casket breaks. She falls on the ground. The corpse falls out of the casket, rolls onto Allison Lohman, and, like, it just keeps heightening, right? You're like, oh my God, now she's got this corpse on her. But no, it does not stop there, audience. Then all of this embalming fluid comes rushing out of Sylvia Ganish's mouth and just all over Allison Lohman's face. And it is one of the funniest fucking things in this movie. It just keeps going. Don't even look like that, Lauren. You laughed your ass off. I sat right next to you when this happened.
It was upsetting and horrifying, and I laughed because I was uncomfortable.
Yeah, and that's this movie.
That is this movie. You're like, you're grossed out, and you're disgusted, you're appalled, but you're also laughing because, like, that's the human response, you know?
Yeah.
Because you need that outlet.
But then it gets even better. So right before she leaves, she looks over at they put the body back in the casket, and they, like, mm-hmm. prop it up again. Looks over, and the eyes of the corpse are just staring at her.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
They're like, I'm coming for you soon, bitch.
So then she goes back to Ramjas, the man, the psychic at the shop, and he's like, "Yeah, cool. I know a person that can do this seance.
I know a guy,
but it's gonna cost $10,000 cash tomorrow."
Yeah.
So she sells all of her earthly possessions.
And again, I don't think that you can be mad and you can curse anyone in a customer service role
that doesn't
make enough money to have $10,000 in their savings. I think that that's the rule.
I think the rule is if you don't have enough money to perform an emergency seance, you should be absolved from being cursed.
Yes, I think that that's just not fair.
I think that's a new rule. Can we start that? Can we all agree about that, folks?
Yeah, also, like, if you curse me at that point, I'm like, lady, I will fucking pay for your mortgage. Like, what do you need me to do? Just uncurse me.
Here's the
I'll pay for your fucking house. I'll buy your house for you.
Right. So, like, here's the other shitty thing about
it. I'll get my rich boyfriend to buy your house.
She sells all of her, like, expensive
all of her earthly goods.
Yeah.
Like, literally everything she owns.
Her house is, like, empty. She has no cat, no possessions. Nothing.
She, like, went to the shed.
Yeah.
And is selling, like, all of the shit in her shed. Like, all the tools.
She sells it all. She gets like $3,800. And then Justin Long just shows up and is like, "I paid for the seance."
And I'm like, when did she tell you about the seance?
A, when did she tell you about the seance? B, thanks for doing that. C, couldn't you have done it earlier? I sold all of my earthly possessions.
Can you go buy my shit back?
Maybe this was all just a plan for her to become more and more dependent on him so that he could like assert his dominance.
He's like,
"Can
you curse my girlfriend so she becomes fully financially dependent on me?"
He's like, "I know I seem like a beta, but this is how I become an alpha."
Well, and also now it's much easier for me to go, "Hey, babe, you know how you don't have any stuff? Like, maybe we should just move in together."
It sucks that you just don't have any stuff. Oh, you don't even have a big old bed.
Oh, I have a bed.
Oh my god, you don't even have a TV anymore? You know, I've got a TV in my place. I think this is all just a plan.
I think this is really going to work out for us. And then it just totally backfires on him.
Yeah, she got dragged to hell. But, so the...
And he is single again.
Get to the best scene of the movie, the seance.
The seance is the best scene in the movie.
All right, you want to set it up?
So yeah, she pays the $10,000. Justin Long just straight up, like, drops her off at the seance. Like, doesn't come in. And so it's a very classic seance. It's her... The
woman from the opening.
Yeah, the woman from the opening. It is the palm reader, and then just like a random assistant dude.
Yeah, an intern.
Who is like way out of his element. And then this goat.
Oh my god, yeah, they bring in a goat. You're like, this goat's death getting sacrificed.
And this goat is like, wait. I did not agree to this.
It is a real goat.
It is a really funny
goat. We should bring this up. It's a real goat. And we bring this up because all goats are hilarious.
Except for the ones that are scary.
Like Black Phillip.
Yeah, Black Phillip's very scary. Like, goats are scary.
Well, it's like if you get that close on a close-up of a goat where you just see their eye and you see the weird, like...
The slit.
Yeah, man. It's creepy. You just see that, that's creepy. From, like, a mid-shot of a goat, hilarious.
So silly.
Then it's a Taylor Swift TikTok.
And then every
shot... as soon as you get closer, like, the goat gets scarier.
Every time that she's in, like, this goat is in the background, it's making a hilarious face. It's like, guys?
Because
what if we didn't do this?
All the actors are playing it so seriously. They're really, like... And this goat's just like, the fuck am I doing here?
This goat's like, this is goddamn bullshit.
I can't believe I'm non-union still.
I can't believe I'm gonna get sacrificed for this absolute bullshit white lady.
I can't believe I finally get representation in my first role as a sacrificial fucking goat.
This sucks. The union really let me down.
Sucks. I can't believe this shit.
I should have taken my equity card when I could.
Go to the parties, they said. Make connections, they said.
Now I'm getting sacrificed. Although he doesn't get sacrificed. The goat lives.
No.
I love that the goat lives. The goat doesn't get dragged to hell. The goat is, like, for all intents and purposes, probably living his best life.
Yeah, man. He is the goat. The Sean, the woman who's the medium, ends up getting the spirit. Or no, she's not even the spirit of Lamia. She's like, oh, there are like a shit ton of spirits here, BRB.
just like we're gonna have to like sift through all of those to get to the woman.
Yeah, she's like, do you feel how many spirits are here? And Alison Lohman's like, no. And she's like, oh, there are a lot. Like
I don't want to like brag, but like, I got a lot. There are a lot of spirits.
I put out the call and like a lot of people liked it.
Like,
a lot of people liked my post.
Like, when I do seances, like, ghosts just, like, show up.
I know. Like, I got so many downloads on my first
week. She literally says, like, they're waiting at the door for me to open it. It's like, I have, like, a huge waiting list of people waiting to be, like, seanced.
Yeah, and
it's
so...
It's not a big deal, but, like, I was listed on TripAdvisor as, like, one of the number one seance.
Yeah, but what that says to me is, as a medium, she's just like, hey, any and all spirits, what's up? And then they all show up, and she goes, no... No.
Chorus line style.
No. Stick around, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
No.
You leave your resume, you might be good for my next project.
Yeah. And then finally it's just like, okay, cool. I think we got Lamia.
I think you're Lamia.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look like a Lamia.
And so Lamia possesses her.
Yes. And she's like, whoopty doodly doo. Didn't realize that could happen.
And she starts reaching for Allison Lohman. And she's like,
every time you say Allison Lohman, I think of Willie Lohman from Death of a Salesman, and it's just really funny. Continue.
Yeah, sorry. And then she reaches for Christine Brown.
Yes.
And she's like, they're like, hey, Lamia, you're so fucking awesome and cool. Don't you want like a better sacrifice than fucking Christine?
Don't you want like a meal?
She's a snack.
This girl's a bag of Cheetos.
You don't want her.
And not even like the fun hot Cheetos, like just like regular Cheetos, like baked Cheetos.
I'm controversial opinion, those are better, but.
Okay, well, you're not Lamia.
No, Lamia's a Flamin' Hot Cheetos person.
Lamia's absolutely a Flamin' Hot Cheetos lady.
Yeah, Lamia's on the level.
She lives on the edge.
But Lamia's like, nah, I don't want anybody but Christine Brown. She shamed me. Yeah. And
it's like, oh my God, will you ever get over this? Lady, you were about to die in like a day anyway. It didn't matter.
Yeah, she's like, she shamed me, and I want her soul so bad. And yeah. Then this is when Allison Lohman, music's going, fans blowing, everything. Allison Lohman just screams in its own fashion. She's like, I didn't mean to do it. My manager made me do it. You can't do this because my manager made me do it. And it's so funny because, like, yeah, that's kind of what I would do too.
I'm just like, I just work in the bank. What do you want me to do?
It's like, you know who does not care about, like, work hierarchies? This old goat demon. But then they get the best shit in the world to happen because they make a point of being like, we draw the spirit into one of us, then we have that person touch the goat, it'll pass into the goat, and then we can sacrifice the goat, effectively killing Lamia. Mm-hmm. So. They get her to touch the, you know, they trick her into touching the goat.
This is an absolute clusterfuck. I would like to point out that this intern had one job. His job is when the Lamia is in the goat, you kill the goat.
And he sees the Lamia jump into the medium, and he's like, maybe I gotta kill the medium now?
And they're like, no.
And they're like, don't improvise.
One job, sir.
No.
Do not.
It's the Coen brothers, not Adam McKay. No. Don't improvise.
No.
And so but she touches the goat. And that's right, folks. This goat starts talking.
I love it. Honestly wish the goat had been talking longer. I could have done some more talking goat.
It's an incredible, like, 45 seconds of talking demon goat.
Yeah, it's great. It's not even 45 seconds. It's, like, maybe 10 seconds.
And then the guy, the intern is like, all right, I'm going to kill this goat. But, oh no, the goat's crafty. And so he pulls away. Bless you. Oh my goodness. Oh my God. But then... He accidentally cuts the rope, not the goat. Cut the rope, not the goat. Cut the rope, not the goat.
Yeah.
And then the goat chomps down on his arm, and now the intern is
real yakety sax routine.
This all happens in like 30 seconds, where it just passes from one person to a goat to another person.
I would love it if someone recut this scene set to the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
And Lamia is now in the body of this intern, dancing in the air.
In the air above a fire, just like straight up doing the Pennywise dance.
It's incredible. The medium casts out Lamia, but Lamia is now like floating above like the room, and she's like, cool, we got it. And they leave.
And this lady dies.
Straight
up is like, her body just gives out.
Yeah, she's like, just like, this was rough for me.
And then the guy, the palm reader is like, yeah, no, you're still fucked. We didn't do anything.
Yeah, she's like, well, we did it, right? We cast it out. And it's like, no, what we learned is that we couldn't do that.
We actually learned that that is not an option. We learned that we can, like, make her leave the room, but she's going to come back.
Yeah, so then Christine has the realization of, like, because he says, no, Lami is going to come for the person who holds the gift.
Yes.
And she realizes, well, the gift was the button.
The button.
And it's like, is there anything in the demon rule books that say that I can't give this gift back to the woman who gave it to me.
Yeah.
Because in her culture.
Else. To someone else.
Well, to someone else, yes. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, to someone else. So she has, and this doesn't really ultimately matter. She considers it giving it to a few other people in this diner.
This seems great.
Including this, like,
she sees a kid.
This couple that's fighting. And, like, then this old man that has, like, an oxygen tank. She's like, he's gonna die soon anyway.
Just sitting, staring at a Denny's. You know, and there's one of these in every Denny's.
It's also very important that, like, to the plot, that, like, this button is in a sealed envelope.
Yeah.
Which is a dumb move.
And she calls, yeah, so, and then she calls Stu. She's like, Stu, get to this diner. I'm ice cream drunk.
Yes.
You get to this diner in 10 minutes or I'm gonna...
I love that she's just a child and she's just eating like the biggest fucking ice cream sundae.
And she's like, give me another. Make it a double.
Make it a double. I want a shot that is pure Hershey's chocolate sauce.
And they're like, okay. And she's like, I grew up on a farm.
Hershey's sauce on the rocks. Hit me.
Stu shows up having just blown 4 lines of coke in his car.
Yeah, this guy's a mess.
And is like, oh shit, you know that I stole your loan and tried to give it to another bank.
Yeah. And she almost gives it to him, but then he starts crying and she has mercy on him.
And she's like, God, he's so pathetic. I can't curse him for eternity. And I'm like, yes, you can.
You absolutely can.
But
this dude absolutely sucks and you absolutely can. She doesn't, and then that's when she realizes the technicality of, I can give it back to the woman who cursed me.
Yeah, and they're like, much like an Airbud, they said, ain't no rule says you can't give an old Romani woman back their curse gift.
Yep, and so she digs this lady up.
I love that this is, she's like, because they
she digs a big hole.
She digs a fucking full coffin
size. And it is nice and rectangular.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
It is very precise.
Well, I guess she's just been in, like, put in the ground probably like earlier that day. Or probably like the day before. So it's probably not that. It's probably pretty loose.
She's digging in the rain.
Oh, this scene looks amazing. I love the cemetery in this scene.
I'm just saying, like, she had to work hard for this.
It looks like the Beetlejuice design. It makes me so happy.
It's very cool. It gets very, very silly. So she digs this woman up. She, like, straight up, like yoinks her jaw apart and shoves this gift into her mouth. Like, cracks it closed, and then it starts raining so hard that the grave floods.
The grave floods, and the woman starts floating up. This is when the woman comes and hey buddies her. And what comes up behind her? This corpse. And it's just like, and I'm here.
Yep.
And to, like, Sylvia Gannish.
And then she's like trying to get out, and then one of the crosses falls down and hits her on the head, and she like almost drowns in this grave.
It's nuts.
It's so silly.
But she gives her the gift, or she gives her the envelope that she believes has the button in it, and then she gets out and she finally leaves.
And she lives happily ever after.
And the next day she gets a phone call from her boss saying that Stu came over and tried to pin the whole the loan mix-up on her.
Should have given him the button.
He had inconsistencies in his story, and the boss figured it out and fired Stu. And guess what? Now Christine Brown is the new assistant manager of blank and blank bank.
You got what you wanted, girl.
Congratulations, girl.
She's
everything
about to go
off
on a trip with her boyfriend. He's going to propose.
She shows up. She sees a new beautiful blue coat. She's like, I want that coat.
Sick.
I've got a new beautiful life.
Yep.
And I got $3,800 to burn and buy some new stuff for my house.
And then at the train station,
amazing
Justin
shit.
Long says, oh, you threw away your old coat. That's crazy because I still have this button.
And she's like, that's stupid because my old coat smelled like dead woman and embalming liquid. Of course I was going to get rid of it. You can't wash wool that much.
And he has the button. He has the button because, of course, you put that button in a fucking envelope the same way that you put that collector's coin for your boyfriend in an envelope, and everything got mixed up in the car and you grabbed the wrong envelope and you never gave away that button, you dumb dumb.
You should have just opened up the fucking envelope.
Open the envelope. Make sure.
Yeah.
It's only like it's true. Like, the only consequence is that you could get dragged to hell if you don't double check. Like,
yeah, but you know what? This is on you.
This is very much your fault. And so she gets dragged to hell.
Yeah, no. And honestly, here's the thing. Oversight and not paying attention to details, not qualities you want in an assistant manager.
No, she doesn't deserve the job.
No, she deserves to get dragged to hell.
She deserves to get dragged to hell.
She may not deserve to get dragged to hell, but she doesn't deserve to be an assistant manager.
And she doesn't deserve to be promoted. She deserves to stay at the exact same job that she's at.
Yeah, like, you're a loan officer. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You're not, like,
it's
you're,
not bad.
You're probably, like, 30. Like, that's pretty good.
It's not bad. And plus, you're about to marry a rich dude anyway. Like, it's fine.
But she straight up gets dragged to hell, and it's a CGI monster mash. And Justin Long is crying, and it's the last shot of the movie, and then it's just like, drag me to hell. When this happened in the theater, the first time I saw it, I was shocked.
Really? Did you love it? Did you see it in a packed theater?
I saw it at this place called the Cinema Cafe, which mm-hmm. is like the dollar theaters. Mm-hmm. And they were like kind of like, they were like tables, because mm-hmm. they would serve food there. So I'm pretty sure that it was like at the very least like 2/3 of the way full.
Did people like gasp? Were people like,
people Whoa! Were cracking up. It was like, it was like, great.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like people were yelling at the screen. People were like having a great time. People mm-hmm. were like laughing a lot. I remember there was like a lot of laughter.
That's great.
And it was the one of the first times that I had ever in a theater heard that response in a horror movie. Mm. And it was a really huge experience for me.
Yeah.
But like, because I had never really seen those two genres mixed like that before. I'd seen them mixed in ways that were like Scary Movie, where it was like, this is more funny, but we're playing with horror tropes, like we were talking about with like the Happy Death Day movies.
It's a parody.
But I had never seen it where it was like something was so ludicrous and goes from being scary to being campy.
Yeah.
On purpose. Like it's not, that it's not an unintentional thing. The way that like Evil Dead, mm-hmm. if you've ever read like, Bruce Campbell has a couple really amazing autobiographies. One of them is like the one that I've read is like Confessions of a Famous Chin, mm-hmm. and he talks a lot about the making of the first Evil Dead in that movie, and he talks a lot about them going into that movie with the full intent of making the scariest movie they possibly could, but then realizing during production that they didn't have the budget that would be able to actually make it as effective as they would want. But they could but it was like, how do we take this negative and make it a positive? Let's revel in how cheap everything looks and just make it as insane as we possibly can.
I love that.
And so he, like, they on the fly developed, like, essentially what is modern horror movie camp.
And created a completely new tone.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And so Evil Dead is, and then I think perfects it in Evil Dead 2, which is like this movie on steroids.
Yeah.
Because it's even less plot and even more insanity. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. If you've never seen Evil Dead 2, audience, go check it out. But yeah, that's Drag Me to Hell. There's not a ton of trivia about this movie. Mm-hmm. I could find most of it just involves, like, there are a lot of homages to Sam Raimi's past work in this. Mm-hmm. The car that Sylvia Gannis drives is the car from Evil Dead. When Alison Lohman reaches out from the grave in when she's being like rained on, it's the image from the poster of Evil Dead, like stuff like that.
That's cool.
But aside from that, it's mainly like that's pretty much it. The legend of the Lamia is like culled together from like 3 or 4 different cultures. It's like a Greek myth and like a Russian myth,
an Arthurian. I know myth. That it's like. I think it's one of the Arthurian legends, or at least it was on the TV show Merlin. It's also like they featured that creature on, I think, on Supernatural. They featured that creature on The Magicians, I think. Like it pops up everywhere.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And yeah, and that's Drag Me to Hell. Do you want to guess what the budget of this movie may have been? In 2009, so the year after Iron Man.
How much is Iron Man?
$140
million. $140 million. I'm going to say.
It came out the year after.
$90 million?
$90 million.
$90 million.
It is $30 million.
Whoa, I was off. I've lost my edge.
The other beauty of horror films. Cheap. Keep the budgets Cheap. Low.
That's right. I went way over. Why did I say
Keep
that?
Keep the budgets low.
I overthought it. I should have gone low.
That 2018 Halloween, $10 million budget.
I know, I'm an idiot.
It's great stuff. How much money do you think it made? Do you think this was a hit?
I think it was probably like broke even. So how much did it cost? $30 million?
30.
Maybe 35?
Made 90.
Oh, shit!
Pretty big hit.
Good.
Yeah. No sequel. Apparently they
I didn't see the Rotten Tomatoes scores. Like 92%. People like this
People movie. Like this movie a lot. Yeah. Like this was a big critical hit. Like critics were on the level with this where they were just like, there goes Raimi doing his Raimi shit.
Yeah.
And like, thank God because nobody's doing this.
Yeah. Very similar to our recommendation.
Yeah, and I kind of think like, okay, so we can get into it now. I guess we'll get into recommendations now. I highly recommend this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I recommend this movie, yeah.
Oh, great.
I don't have like the nostalgia connection to that you did, but I think it's like in the month of Halloween, like absolutely solid choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun chime. If it like basically if what you've heard us say, if you're at this point and you like and what we've said you sound down for, like watch it.
Yeah,
like,
watch
if,
it. It's
if
fucking
you're down
rad.
For a movie that is this particular tone, like this is doing it incredibly well.
Yeah. So we already mentioned what our dual recommendation is going to be.
Yeah, no, there's only one answer to this.
There's
question.
One answer.
There's
to this.
One answer to this question, and it is by far Malignant.
Yeah, there's other horror movies we could recommend, but they're not tonally similar.
No.
In any way, and I think the biggest thing about this movie that I love is the tone.
Is how ridiculous it is. Yeah, the only
movie
that
performances are fine. The effects are okay. We were talking earlier about one of the things I love about Sam Raimi's movies is that like that cheapness quality, but also the fact that his movies feel handmade.
Yeah.
Like, there's something so comforting about like there's definitely somebody behind that wall shaking it, you know, or like the shadow work in it. And the only movie that's really doing that now, the only director that's really doing that now.
The only director that has the balls to like fucking do the thing
is James Wan.
Yeah. Malignant is so fun.
Yeah.
It is such a fun movie. I keep coming back to that. It's like, it is a movie that seems on its surface like it is so dark and portentous, but is the silliest thing I've ever seen.
It's so silly.
I laughed way more in Malignant than I did even during this. Like, Malignant, like the third act of Malignant, and again, we will not spoil anything.
It's
because,
best to
because
go in knowing
nothing. I would never dream of spoiling anything in Malignant for you. But Malignant has the same like grotesque humor that this movie does. It is going for it. It is balls to the wall. It is the funniest shit, the most disturbing shit, and just like the coolest shit that I've ever seen all wrapped up at once. Like that third act is like nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah. It also looks great.
I would have loved to see Malignant in a full theater.
Me too.
I feel like that is the only regret that I have with Malignant is that I wasn't able to see Malignant in a full theater on opening weekend.
Yeah.
Because that is the only better way than like watching it at home and us just like screaming with laughter.
Yeah, I loved every minute of watching it. So much so that we watched it a second time.
Oh my God, I had to because it was leaving HBO Max and I was like, I can't not watch Malignant again.
Yeah, we gotta see our boy Gabriel.
Gabriel!
But yeah, that movie is so incredibly ballsy, I think, in just like the way that it goes about creating like, not just a pretty like a pretty out there concept for a horror movie, but also like I just think the design of that movie is incredible. It looks beautiful,
and it's just like, and even the tone, it's not exactly what Raimi's doing in this, but it is a similar feeling of like, I've never watched anything tonally like this.
Yes.
I have never seen any, like, I don't think I've ever watched a movie that hits the tone that the third act of Malignant hits. It is completely different.
Yeah.
I enjoy it in a different way than I've maybe enjoyed every other movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's something new, the way that this feels like something new.
Yeah.
Again, this movie walked so that Malignant could fucking fly.
Yes.
And I feel like that, like, no offense to Drag Me to Hell, I just think Malignant is like on an absolutely another level of bonkers town.
Yeah, it's pretty excellent. Yeah. But yeah, so definitely check out Malignant if you can. I'm sure it's going to be coming back to HBO Max soon.
If it fits the template that it has in the past, like, it'll be back.
Yeah. Also recommend if you, like we said before, the other ones, the central viewing, I think, for this one would be check out House if you've never seen House.
Yeah.
I think it's from 1977, and then Evil Dead 2,
yeah.
Which is just fantastic. Watch all the Evil Dead movies. Mm-hmm. Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. I've not seen this remake. I kind of have no interest in seeing it, but whatever.
I've heard mixed things. Some people really ride hard for it.
Yeah, I don't want to see an Evil Dead that's actually a horror film, though.
True.
I want to see it where it's really goofy and Bruce Campbell's in there. And the musical. Go see Evil Dead the musical. Seek that out.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's Drag Me to Hell from 2009. And that's the end of Spooptober.
Spooptober.
Like we've dubbed it. Man, what a time.
What a time to be alive.
Lauren, do you have anything to plug?
As usual, The Vanishing Act, which is our scripted podcast that is also available for free, much like this is. And so you can find that at vanishingpod.com on all of our socials at vanishingpod, or you can just search The Vanishing Act wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. We have a full first season out. It is a full cast, like fully scripted, fully designed, fully scored audio drama that has its similar levels of absolute ridiculousness. So we're very proud of it, and we would love it if you joined us on that show.
We are Gabriel.
Not on this show, but spiritually, yes.
Also, feel free to check out The Living Force on the Utini Podcast Network that is hosted by Eric Eilerson for all of your extended universe Star Wars needs. Before we head out today, I do have to make a public apology to all of our listeners because I was informed Aggie is an actual nickname for Agatha by one of our listeners. So, Lena, thank you so much for telling me.
I'm glad that you've seen the error of your ways.
And I wanted to make this apology on air publicly. thank you very much. I love horror movies. I love you all. Thank you so much for listening, folks. Get vaccinated and go get... Let's do that one more time. Happy Halloween!